So, good morning, everyone. So the motivation behind this work is that, as we all know very well, modern software remains highly complex to design, implement, maintain, and configure, especially when you have dynamic environments that change over time. And this causes high development costs across those activities and often underperforming systems as well. The state of the art in trying to address that complexity issue is in self-adaptive systems, which exhibit some awareness of self and of environment. So they try to tune their own behavior to match an environment. However, these approaches are limited in two major ways. Firstly, they tend to only apply to the configuration aspect of that process. And secondly, they are very manual in their definition. All right, so typically, you would design a base system that's fundamentally not adaptive. You would then select points in that system to be adaptable. And then you would write rules of how to adapt in which situations. So what we're trying to do is, first of all, automate that entire process. And secondly, push that automation much deeper into the development process so it covers design and implementation as well as configuration. So to do that, we're building a paradigm of continuous self-assembly in which both the initial construction of software and its later adaptation are one continuous machine-driven process. So to give an idea of what that might look like, imagine that we have some kind of goal that we want to achieve, and we have lots of small fragments of behavior, bits of logic. All right, so the first thing we want to do is create a working system that reaches the goal, right, that's functionally correct. And once we have that, we would then deploy that system into its live production environment immediately, where it would start learning. All right, so it learns about its behavior, its performance, and the characteristics of its environment. And because it's likely that that first version is not optimal to its environment, we then imagine that we would need to find other ways of building the same system that do the same job, but in different ways, so they're more optimal. So the system gets shaped onto its environment as it learns. It turns out that doing all this is really hard. So what this paper is really describing is how far we've got towards this goal, which we think is a significant step forward. Okay, so we have three contributions in detail. First, we have an implementation platform, which is what we use to build these small building blocks of code so that we can self-assemble systems and then continuously reassemble them with very low cost. So this platform gives us very fast runtime adaptation. The second thing we have is then a perception assembly and learning framework, which abstracts over entire compositions of components to give us candidate systems that we can use. And then finally, we have an online learning approach, which helps to solve the search-based explosion that's inherent in doing this, where you have many, many possible ways of building the same system. And although we deal with fairly futuristic technology, we try to ground ourselves in reality, which is where the challenge really is. And so for this paper, we use an emergent self-assembling web server as an example system to apply our approach. All right, so I'm going to cover each of those contributions in some detail, and they form three levels of our system. And I'll start with the bottom level, so the implementation platform. All right, so when we started doing this project a few years ago, the first thing that was really apparent is that there is no technology available to do this bottom level, where you can build small bits of code and have them seamlessly adapt at runtime as a continuous process. So we built that, and that was a major chunk of engineering work that we did. So we took the component-based paradigm to start with, and we put that into a general-purpose systems programming language. And this language supports very fast, very fine-grained runtime adaptation as a continuous process. I mean, it's also, we think, much, much easier to use than classical component models because we don't use wiring diagrams or architecture description languages. We just write the code and everything else happens by itself. So for anyone not familiar with this idea, here's an example component, an example interface. This is actually a web server, so it starts a server socket and then accepts client connections. All right, so this paradigm is all about interfaces and strong encapsulation. So every component provides and requires a set of interfaces, and each required interface is a dependency on external functionality. And to make a system work, we have to then wire up dependencies to other components. So in this example, we would load a different component to memory, and we would then make a wiring from the required to provide an interface. And because those wirings are first-class entities in the language, we can then develop different implementations of that same interface and then rewire that connection at runtime with no disruption. All right, so that's the fundamental technology with which we build lots of small chunks of functionality that we can assemble systems out of. On top of that, we then have an assembly and perception level, which abstract over that into entire candidate systems for machine learning. All right, so this has an assembly and perception module, and I'll briefly go through how each of those things work. So first of all, the assembly module, this gets given a main component, just like the web server you just saw. And its job is to look at that and try to discover how to build a system around it. Right? And it does this by looking at the required interfaces of that component and then searching the local system for any implementations of those interfaces that exist. So in this case, it might find two possible implementations. And these are actually two different concurrency models, so a thread per client model and a pool of threads model. And then it recursively does the same thing. So it looks at those components and then searches the system to see which implementing components can I find for those. And in this case, we might find four different options. And that continues until we find a total set of possible ways that we can build this system. Right, so we end up with a list of different identifiers, each of which refers to one complete composition of behavior for our web server. And then we can select one. Right? So let's say we pick the first one. That means that the live system seamlessly adapts to that collection of behavior. And again, if we pick the third one on the list, then again, the system seamlessly adapts to that configuration of behaviors. And each of these sets of behaviors is functionally correct, but does the job in a slightly different way. In the web server example, it's things like, does it use caching or not? Does it use compression or not? What kind of compression does it use? What kind of caching does it use? All right, so we have a way to discover how to build systems and to select systems from among those populations. The next thing we need is a way to perceive how they're currently doing, so we can learn. And that's the perception module, which is really simple. It's just one interface, which is called a recorder. And any component that we write in our platform can declare this as a required interface and can then emit metrics and events. So metrics describe something about how a component is feeling, so its response time or its cache misses, something like that. And events describe something about the environment in which a component exists. So that could be its recent set of inputs or the amount of free memory on the system. So over time, as the system runs, we collect a set of these metrics and events. And for the web server example that we used for this paper, metrics are response time and events are the media types that have been requested over time. All right, so that's the low-level building block technology, the assembly and perception level, which abstract entire systems that we can reason over. And the last level I want to talk about is then how does learning work on top of that? All right, so the learning algorithm we have for this paper is intended to help solve the search-based explosion problem that's inherent in doing this. So as an example of that, what I just showed you, if we decompose that into all its different possible combinations, we find that there are 40 different ways of building the same system. And this is just a simple example, right? So the more components you add, the more variations you get until you get ultimately very, very many options. And if you're learning about this online, starting from no information, then actually going through 40 different options is a lot of work to do. It takes a long time. So we want to look at a way of reducing that search space so we learn much, much faster. All right, so here's what we do. First of all, we take all of the configurations that come from the assembly module, and we remove all components that have no variations. And secondly, for components that do have variations, we create a regression factor for all components above a given baseline. So that means we go from this situation to this. All right, so instead of having to estimate 40 different options, we now have to just estimate 9 regression factors. All right, the next thing we do is we put all this information into a matrix where the columns of the matrix are complete configurations, so there are 40 columns. And the rows of the matrix are these regression factors that we derived. And there's a 1 in a cell if the regression factor is present in that configuration and a zero otherwise, which means that that component is or is not present in the configuration. All right, so then learning works like this. We constantly, every n seconds, so for example, every 5 seconds or every 10 seconds, we select a composition from that matrix that either we know little about or that we know performs very well. So at the beginning of the system, we know nothing about anything, so we pick a random configuration, for example, number 3. And then we run that for 5 seconds, we collect perception data from it at the end of that 5-second time window, and then we update our model to reflect that perception data. All right, so this shows that we have a higher reward for that selected configuration, and we are now more certain that that reward is true. What we then do is we share information across configurations. So we look across the rows of this matrix, and we say, for every other configuration that has the same regression factors in it, we use the same estimates for those factors. All right, so that means that without having to actually test other configurations, we learn about them from having tested some of the same components that they use. And then we carry on doing that for all of the different configurations we have until we build a complete picture of the world. All right, so that's a whistle-stop tour of the implementation that's behind us. That last thing I want to look at is evaluation. So the evaluation in the paper is actually quite extensive and covers 3 different areas. It looks at adaptation speed, so how quickly do we adapt to different configurations. It looks at developing a performance ground truth, so for our web server, for example, which configurations are actually optimal in different workloads. And then it looks at the characteristics of learning, so how quickly do we learn that ground truth in real time, starting from known information. I'm just going to focus on the last of these 3 things in the talk, and the rest is in the paper. All right, so on learning characteristics, using our web server as an example, we evaluate how optimal compositions of behavior emerge over time using our approach. And to do this, we use a set of different workloads, so client request patterns, including both synthetic ones and also real traces from real servers. And just as a reminder, the only information available to the learning approach is firstly, the set of configurations that comes out of the assembly module, and secondly, the metrics and events that the system happens to emit, in this case, response time and the request types and sizes. All right, and here's some of those results. So all graphs here are showing you regret, which is a learning measure. And the higher the bar is, that means the further away it is from the known optimal for that point in time. All right, so what we see here, for example, on the right is a workload of small text files. And it shows you that it takes 5 time steps to learn what's the best thing to do. All right, so it has a set of 40 possible configurations, and it tries 5 of them before it figures out what the best option is. So this approach of trying just some configurations and then sharing information across them works really, really well. All right, the graph on the right shows a different workload, but the same idea. So this workload's a bit more challenging because we get fewer data points per second. But we see the same trend where we get a very fast drop-off in regret after a short learning time. These graphs also show what the point in time where you would reach optimality if you exhausted the search space. So if you tried every single one of those 40 options, it takes you that long to reach optimality. So we're much, much faster than that. All right, the second thing I want to look at or highlight was adaptation. So not only do we want to be able to find optimality in this situation, we want to be able to change the workload that we give the system and see, does it pick that up? Does it figure out what's best to do over time? So in this test, we alternate between 2 different workloads, A and B, continuously, and we see how the system responds. So we see that the first 2 times it sees these 2 workloads, there is very high regret as it's learning what's best. But then after that, there's very low regret continuously. Right? So not only does it learn what the best option is, it also remembers it if it sees the same thing in the future. And lastly, just to point out a real-world trace that we used, or an example one that we used, This is a very challenging trace indeed, which has very highly varying requests over very short time periods. But again, we see a same kind of learning trend where we really do learn the optimal composition of behaviors over time. Besides the facts and figures, though, actually one of the most interesting parts of the evaluation was where we found cases in which the learning system discovered an optimal composition that was unexpected, that we just didn't believe. And then we had to go back and look at the code in detail to figure out why did it pick that. And every time we did that, we did actually find that it really did pick the optimal, and there was either some mismatched assumption in what we thought would be optimal, or there was some program error or design choice that was bad for that particular piece of code. So those are some of the interesting things that we found in doing this. All right, so just to sum up, I've presented the idea of emergent software as a way of trying to solve the complexity problem of modern software systems. And we use a paradigm of continuous self-assembly from small fragments of behavior that we discover and build over time. This is an ongoing large project, and in future work, we're looking at various different applications that we can apply the same idea to, and other things like the automatic generation of variants of behavior over time. And that's it. Thanks for your attention.
Hello, I'm Ming Yu from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. So my problem is about the adaptation. Is there any safety problems when you do the adaptation at the wrong time? You know, for example, you change from the cache mode to the compression mode. Maybe you need to invalidate all the cache. But for different transformation, you need different policies. So is there any safety problems? Or do you need to write the transformation algorithms by yourself?
So the system includes actually a well-specified adaptation procedure which guarantees consistency across adaptations. So in the paper, there's an algorithm which defines that. And in terms of caches needing filling, that stuff is all part of the learning system. So it figures out how long it takes to adapt by itself.
But for example, if you need to change from the caching to the non-caching, you need to evaluate all the cache. Who writes the policy? The system automatically adapt to the policy, or the programmer need to write the policy manually and adapt the policy at runtime?
Okay, so in that case, the cache component would actually be unloaded from the system completely, and we would then load up the compression version. So the programmer doesn't have to do that. The system figures out how to adapt between the two.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Kyle from MongoDB. When you still need humans to like code up the components,
Yeah. What
is the optimal for you guys? Like, what's the optimal size of which you should break up the modules? Like, should you go really, really tiny and have to work with a large search space, or make them like more complex and more prone to human error?
Yeah, so we generally go for smaller ones because that gives us the higher set of possible combinations that we can search within. And we've shown that actually having a big search space is not a big deal. So by having much smaller things, we have then a bigger possible set of designs that we can pick automatically, and they're also easy to test. So we go small.
Thank you.
So as an example, there around 200 lines of code would be the top we would go with. Okay.
Hi, Kent Williams King from the University of British Columbia. I think you may have answered this in the previous question.
Okay.
Have any intuitions for how well this system scales out to many, many different component combinations? Like your web server example says 40, but what if you had, for example, 100,000? How well would you think the system would scale?
So we don't know is the answer. We hope it would have similar, so you can tell that, right, so it takes 5 tests to cover 40 possible configurations, so we assume that that ratio would be about the same as you scale up, but we haven't tested it yet.
Thank you.
But thanks.
Sid Sen, Microsoft Research. So regarding your exploit approach, my understanding is that should ultimately at some point converge to exploit more than to explore, because it's learned a lot from
yeah.
what's happened. You showed in your evaluation that you can adapt to changing workloads.
Yeah.
How long can you keep doing this? Because things will eventually converge and get kind of the models will get kind of ossified and not adapt as much. So how do you cope with that?
the models will eventually, I'm sorry, what was that word?
So I guess my question was, wouldn't the model kind of, or what you're exploiting kind of converge and become a little less flexible over time? So would it really be able to adapt to changing workloads forever?
Yes, okay, something I didn't show you in this is that there's also a classifier of the environment, so we're constantly classifying the world around the system. And we save the learning model state per class environment, if that makes sense. So that avoids converging on a global kind of smooth optimal, if you like.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
We can talk about it. Thanks. Okay.